What would you do with 30 extra minutes a day? With LG, that time starts coming back. LG appliances are built to make everyday life feel lighter. With LG, fewer laundry mistakes, fresher groceries, and easier cleanup add up to more time back. 30 extra minutes isn't just time saved, it's breakfast without rushing, dinner without stress, and one less thing to juggle. Smart performance, sleek style, and reliability for real life, that's LG. Get your time back with LG. See the latest models and savings now at LG.com.
The Killer Bees!
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. It's the assistant to the regional manager, Joe George, behind the glass. And it is a Tuesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Hope you're all staying safe out there. A little hairy drive into work today. I hope everybody's okay. Be careful. No, it's raining outside and there's some street flooding.
I know, but I didn't know you grew hair because of that.
Hilarious joke. Anyways, today is the day that Joe George is going to be eating tuna. We solved tuna gate. I have purchased the tuna out of the vending machine. What time are we doing this, Joe George? What time is
1:30.
Your lunch?
I put 12:45.
12:45. Oh. He's a little hungry.
A little
today.
Hungry today. The boiler room's growling early.
He's little hungry today. Right. So we have the vending machine tuna salad that Joe George will be eating today as we solve tuna gate.
This was a best case scenario.
The new addition of the vending machine here at Gal Media was this Bumblebee Snack on the Run tuna salad kit.
It's a Bumblebee.
And somehow we conned Joe George into eating
it's
this.
It's a Bumblebee.
I don't know how we accomplished this.
I don't know either. I mean, we could make an intern do it, but I just started.
That's against the rules.
I just took over the internship
program. If they volunteer, can we?
You can't abuse interns anymore.
But if they volunteer, is that abuse?
They still have to sign like a release, and then there's liability.
We can print that up between now and 12:45.
I feel like this is going to go.
God, I feel like I'm on the usual suspects.
This
weekly with the way they wanted to torture intern.
This is going to go one of two ways. I think I'm going to yak. Or I'm going to be disgusted with myself.
Do you not like tuna?
No, I do like tuna.
You're going
to
be fine.
But I don't want to like vending machine tuna. Like, I'm almost going to be disappointed in myself if I like it, I think.
Did it bother you that the expiration date on the tuna was 3 to 5 years?
I told you yesterday that this stuff does not go old. This stuff does not go bad. Actually, it says Best Buy May 24. So maybe it does go old.
We got a year.
It does turn. It will turn on you.
Oh, it may turn on you quicker than that, Joe.
May 24th or May 2024?
Huh?
May 24th or May 2024?
2024.
Okay. So we got a year.
So you got a year. Yeah.
I mean, that's on a shelf. What about in your stomach?
I don't know.
Because there's a big difference. There might be a different expiration cycle going on in your boiler room as opposed to the shelf or the vending machine.
Yeah. So anyways, that's going to happen at 12:45, you said? Cannot wait for Joe George to have a little bit of lunch. From me, by the way. I bought you lunch today. Remember that when you talk to people. The Astros lost baseball yesterday. Another tough one. They're now under 500 on the year, and then they get the honor of facing Shohei Ohtani tonight, who is undefeated, leads the American League in strikeouts per nine. Astros will have their hands full, although they will have Framber Valdez, their ace, on the mound. 2-4. Framber Valdez. Yesterday, I liked how the Astros aren't going to bring Michael Brantley back today, by the way. They're like, oh, yeah, he's fine. He's healthy. He came through rehab assignment just fine. He's here in the dugout, but we're not going to activate him until Wednesday. We don't really want him. They didn't say this, but we don't really want him to face Shohei Ohtani in his first baseball game in the big leagues in 2023.
That's smart. We talked about it yesterday, and I think you were the one that brought it to the table, but if you have the option, then it's probably best to just let him get comfortable again by kind of starting out with middle-of-the-road pitchers as opposed to one of the best players in baseball. So I think that's fine. I mean, look, I don't think the offense was a problem last night. I mean, for the most part, I mean, someone woke up Alex Bregman, you know, that you had some pop. You had offensive production. I mean, you put four on the board. I thought they were in a position to win it. But, you know, again, second straight start, Hunter Brown doesn't have his A game. And the Angels are a team that, as much as, you know, you can criticize what they've done in the past, when they're healthy, they have some talent. They have some hitters. They've got some ball players. They've added And you know, they earned the win late against the Astros bullpen.
Yeah, they're a much better team than they were a year ago. First with Bregman, like encouraging his first couple of at bats, like, yeah, you get a base hit and then you sting one down the right field line. It's like, okay, cool. I like this Alex Bregman. This is good. This is something that I want to see. And then in Bregman's final at bat, he launches one up into the air 350 feet, about as far as he can hit the baseball these days. Watching Alex Bregman, and look, critical of him yesterday, critical of how he's performed this year. And if you want to look at the last four seasons, he's certainly not a player that's worth $30 million a year. I'm at this point, though, with Alex Bregman. He needs to stop thinking that he can be the 40 home run a year Alex Bregman and turn into Dustin Pedroia. Just hit line drives everywhere. Stop trying to yank the ball out of the ballpark. Stop trying to lift the ball out of the yard. You are no longer 40 home run Alex Bregman. You're no longer 30 home run Alex Bregman. Turn into Dustin Pedroia, hit 12 home runs a year, and hit the ball on a seed every single time at bat. That's what I want to see with Alex Bregman. I don't want to see any more of these pop flies. He doesn't have the power that he used to have for whatever reason.
I had mentioned this to you yesterday, that I thought that he was popping up the ball excessively. And not even like warning track or deep fly balls. He just was getting way under it. And I think that I kind of compare it to like an Anthony Davis or a big man that finds out he can shoot the three. He gets so enamored with the fact that he can make some threes, that now he doesn't want to do what his strong suit is that got him, in this case, to the big leagues. Alex Bregman is a contact hitter that puts bat to baseball well and has a really, really good eye at the plate. But a couple of years ago, he had a power surge. And now, all of a sudden, it's like he's enamored with the only way he can validate himself is by hitting, you know, home runs. When, in fact, he should go back to doing what got him to where he was at one of the best in the game, and that was the power will come just by hitting the ball hard.
I don't think so. I think the power's gone for Alex Bregman.
I don't think he's going to hit the power that he's had in the past, but I'm saying if he just goes back to trying to be the contact hitter, hitting the ball hard and kind of hitting more for average, he will still have some pop. You're right. I don't think he's going to have the numbers he had, but I do think he's enamored right now. Or what mentally grinds at him is he still thinks he can be that player.
Yeah,
and I think that's a problem.
I think so. I think he's still capable of 40 home runs a year. I don't think he is. I don't think he's capable of 25 home runs a year. He hit 23 last season. I don't think he's going to gain more power. So I really do think that Alex Bregman should shift his offensive philosophy. Like, look, Alex Bregman still has strengths offensively. Far cry from Jose Abreu with where he's at. Like, Bregman still has good contact. Bregman still has a very good eye at the plate, but he's trying to, every time he swings the bat, not every time, but you catch what I'm putting down here, he tries to lift the ball. He tries to hit the ball out of the yard. No, turn into Pedroia. Hit seeds down the right field line like you did yesterday. Hit line shots. Like, that's the Alex Bregman I want to see. I don't need to see 30 home run Alex Bregman. I don't need to see 40 home run Alex Bregman. I think Bregman, like you said, thinking that he's still capable of hitting 40 home runs a year is leading to a lesser Alex Bregman at the plate. And I'm tired of seeing it. Start hitting line drives. I'm sick of it. Jose Abreu, he's a little bit of sign of life yesterday, although he's getting blown away by 91, 92 mile per hour fastballs. I did like that he had that, you know, shot to right field that actually got caught. The one base hit he had was actually just kind of a weak chopper the other way on a hanging breaking ball.
The extra base hit down the right field line?
Yeah, it was a hanging breaking ball outside half at the letters, and he just hit a slow chopper down the first base line where the defense ain't.
Yeah, he punched it into the ground, and it took the right hop.
Yeah, but he did align that liner into right field. Maybe that's a sign. Hopefully, we're all hoping that Jose Abreu can, you know, figure things out. A little bit later, we're going to talk about which Major League Baseball players have less trade value than Jose Abreu. I bet that there's not many. Fingers crossed that he can figure it out. Hunter Brown yesterday, I didn't think he was bad, Blankers, but I didn't think he was good. The biggest thing that I noticed with Hunter Brown is he didn't get the swing and miss. Hunter Brown, look, he's got really good stuff. I think he has the best stuff on this team. Yesterday, the Angels were putting the ball in play. There was a couple of bleeders, but he wasn't getting the swing and miss. He wasn't getting the strikeouts that he normally does. He only had 3 strikeouts and 4 1/3. And I think that was the difference between when Hunter Brown pitches really well and then when we see an outing like we saw yesterday from Hunter Brown, when he's not getting that swing and a miss. He's not getting that 2-strike punch-out pitch.
Here's one of the first things that I noticed was, for as good as it's been to have Yonier Diaz behind the plate for him, his emotions get the best of him. And Diaz isn't the kind of guy that's going to go out there and calm him down and talk to him and do the kind of things that Maldi does when we talk about him being the starting pitcher psychologist. And I thought last night the emotions got a little bit too, got the best of him. He got too emotional. He got too caught up in either balls that should have been fielded or, you know, whatever the case, things that were happening that weren't going his way. And I think that the emotions maybe took over too much from him concentrating and getting back to pit, just throwing baseballs. And I don't, I'm not advocating to have Maldi back in there. I'm just saying, at a certain point, kind of the way Maldi kind of took Fromber under his wing and got him to, you know, to change his ways along with a sports psychologist, and the way he sometimes does that with other pitchers, at a certain point, I've seen in two straight starts where Hunter Brown gets extremely frustrated and lets his emotions really play a part in him being on the mound, and that's concerning to me.
I didn't notice that, actually. The one time that I saw him get fired up and ticked off, he struck out that dude on three straight 98-mile-per-hour fastballs, one of them touching 99. Like, I didn't see him get rattled, really.
I saw him walking around the mound. I saw him...
Sure, but you know, did it lead to bad stuff?
I'm not talking about what it leads to. But I'm talking about at a certain point, the emotion still can get the best of him.
But sometimes that emotion can be channeled into good.
Sometimes it can.
Like the one example that I just used.
Okay, but there's also times when you start overthrowing because now, when they even said he wants to ramp it up, go 97, 98.
And he struck out the guy on three pitches.
Jesus criminy, Jeremy.
That's what happened.
I mean, here we go. I mean, here we go again where you just, you want to go and go and go. I'm just trying to interject my point and then you keep interrupting me. I'm just saying.
I said it when you were done talking.
Sometimes he empties the tank too early. Sometimes, like, my concern is he gets so emotional on a certain point in, like, the third inning that suddenly he reaches back for 97, 98 for several pitches, and now he's probably not going to be in the game very much longer because whether he threw enough pitches or not, he's really draining it, trying to get out of that inning, and there was a lot of emotion shown. The announcers mentioned it. I saw it. I mean, you didn't see it.
I saw emotion, but I'm not saying the emotion leads to negative. Like, sometimes emotion leads to positive. Like, there was the example whenever they even talked about it on the broadcast. They're like, Hunter Brown looks ticked off right now. Went 98, 99, 98. Good morning, good afternoon, good night. Struck out the dude on three pitches. And Jeff Blum even said, I liked they ticked off Hunter Brown.
Great.
So I saw the emotion, but I saw it led to less than finish. Like, you just got mad that I interrupted you, but you're not letting me finish is my point. Right? I mean, which is it going to work one side or both sides?
Today or every day? Just go ahead.
Okay. So he struck him out, and Jeff Blum said, I like it, ticked off Hunter Brown.
Oh, you're done now? Okay. The thing is that sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I don't think you got a quality start from Hunter Brown last night. I don't think you got a Hunter Brown that went deep into a game. And I think that my point is that when you start doing that, the emotions get the best of you, and you start overthrowing or trying to really blow it by guys. We talked about it in past Verlander when he knew it was his last inning. He'd empty the tank. He'd go and ramp it up and give it everything because he knew he wasn't going back out there. Well, you're expecting him to go back out there for multiple innings. And when he gets emotional and he fires up and starts firing off, you know, 3-4 mile an hour faster fastballs, it may work in that moment, but it works against them for the long term for the game and trying to get a deep start and have him be effective.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. All right, you mentioned it earlier, Blankers. The bullpen didn't blow the game, but cost you the game. It was tied when Rafael Montero came in, gave up a couple of runs. I see a lot of people taking some victory laps today about Rafael Montero. Am I still Team Montero? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Rafael Montero, you could call him a lot of things yesterday. Did not pitch well. Third straight game, he's given up at least a run. He's given up 7 runs in his last 3. He's given up 6 runs in his last 2. The last 2 are the ones that kind of stick out because could have won game 2 Saturday in Seattle. Yesterday was a tie game. Didn't blow a save, but it was a tie game. Came in, gave up another walk, and then the long triple off the wall in center field, sacrifice fly, 2 runs are in, Astros couldn't scratch in the 9th, and they lose 6-4. I've seen a lot of people taking victory laps about Rafael Montero struggling for the second game in a row, 3 if you want to say 3, that's fine. Gave up a run three games ago. What I find to be kind of odd about this, Blankers, and look, I think criticism of Montero is absolutely 100% fair. I think it's 100% fair to criticize the contract. I think you've been very consistent with that. I think you've been fair about that. I got into a little bit of a tiff with Paul Gallant on Twitter the other day about Rafael Montero. I think Paul's criticism, and he brings up some very fair points, are extremely fair. I noticed that, like you, Paul, you're also critical of other things in the city, especially when you look at the football team in this city. I've noticed a lot of people from that other place that are very critical of Rafael Montero, but they also want you to turn a blind eye to the trade the Houston Texans made. Like, I have found that to be incredibly funny, ironic, talking out of both sides of the mouth. And look, I get it. Like, those guys have their checks signed with Texas Toro in the letterhead. So, like, I get it. I understand why, but I find it to be hilarious. Like, I see your point. I see Paul's point. I might disagree, but you are fair in your argument. Even at this station, like, we have some Homer-like shows here at this station that like to root for Toro, but even those guys are fair. But seeing, like, talking out of one side of your mouth about, like, the trade of the draft, and then talking out of the other side of the mouth about, like, Rafael Montero, I find it to be incredibly ironic.
Well, and I think that what we try to do is each situation is its own entity. Regardless of the team, regardless of the situation, if it's Houston or not, we just try to be honest about it and give your honest opinion, because I got into it on Twitter last night with a bunch of Harden hunks. So it happens from situation to situation. As it relates to Montero, the one thing that I brought up to you other than what you mentioned was the fact that he had a career year last year, right? But before that, he was basically kind of a journeyman trying to find his way. Now, he was highly regarded at a certain point when he was coming to the bigs, but he was a starter. He was a relief pitcher. He was on many different teams. And then, you know, over and over again, he was trying to find his way. He was going to be DFA'd, and he got included in the trade. The Astros saw something they liked with his arm, and he had a career year. So I'm curious for all the hate. Because you and I have been able to, as much as we've been on different sides of it, we've been able to have a back and forth about our, you know, the totality of it. Because he's going to be a member of your team for the next 3 years, pretty much, unless you can find a trade partner. So you just have to deal with it. The thing that I was trying to figure out last night after watching that all unfold with and seeing Twitter just kind of just unload on him was, what would have made you happy if you were an Astros fan overall, right? Would you wanted him back, but at a lesser price?
Yeah.
Would you wanted to walk away from him? When Jim Crane obviously knew he had the best bullpen by numbers in the bigs last year, and he was trying to keep it
sure
together without a general manager. But I was just curious from, like, the orange Kool-Aid drinking Astro fan, like, what would have made you happy with Montero to where you wouldn't be as critical right now? Because we know the contract's what's driving a lot of people to be hypercritical.
It's funny that we're, like, on this side of this conversation, because usually it's flipped whenever we talk about Montero. But I would say a one-year deal. Like a one-year deal, maybe with a team option that you can get out of it after a year. Because I don't care about the AAV. Like, I don't care that he's making $11.5 million. I think it is comparable to free agents that were signed in the offseason. The biggest difference is length of contract that Montero got and these other pitchers got. Because Montero got 3 years. These others got, like, 1 year, with the exception of the Suarez guy in San Diego. But they just throw money around. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's a great example. I think it would be the one-year deal. Because the length of the contract, like, I'll admit the length of the contract is nervy. Like, Rafael Montero last year had a career year to where he's pitched at this point in his career. I'm still confident that Rafael Montero is going to turn it around. I looked at Montero's game logs from a year ago. He had a stretch like this a year ago where he gave up 6 runs in 3 games, where he gave up 5 runs in back-to-back outings. So, like, this isn't the end of the world. I still think Rafael Montero is going to turn it around and be just fine. But I do think the length of the contract is, like, the biggest deal and the biggest criticism for Montero. Who cares about the AAV? That's Jim Crane's money. Everybody wants the Astros to spend money. It didn't prohibit them from signing other free agents because they still signed Jose Abreu, the worst offensive player in baseball, to a big contract, and they still signed Michael Brantley and didn't really have a hole on the team when they entered spring training.
The other thing that I think that the reason why the money is a factor, too, is because now people are saying, well, he's one of the top 10 highest paid relievers in baseball. So then their expectations are ratcheted up to another level. So now you're not talking about a setup guy that had a good year last year that you wanted to stay, you know, as a part of this bullpen that did great things. Now you're talking about a guy that no matter what he does, the crosshairs are magnified and every little thing is going to be nitpicked because you're paying him too much. You're paying him as one of the top 10 relievers in the game. Then he should be one of the best 10 relievers in the game. It's like we talk about with quarterbacks. Matt Stafford at one point was the highest paid player in all of the NFL. Was he the best player or the best quarterback? No, but his contract came up at the right time. Just like you talk about the perfect storm. He should have gotten a one-year deal. Probably should have got it for a little less. But you had a situation where you fired your general manager. You had an owner and an ex-player that were trying to lay claim and make a stand that they knew what they were doing and they were going to do what was best for this franchise going forward. And you probably had an agent that said, we got to strike while the iron's hot. You may never have another year like this, but because you did, we need more than 1 year. I don't know if there was competition.
Well, it happened so early, I doubt that there was. That's what I was
going to say, because we never had the opportunity to see, and he never tested the market. Yeah. And obviously, with the money he was offered, why should he? If someone throws you a massive bag of money more than you were expecting, why am I going to go out and see if there's secondary offers? I'm taking that and going home.
Right, yeah. I the way that he, like how early it was in the offseason and how early it was in the game, and the Astros didn't have a general manager. Jeff Bagwell, Reggie Jackson, Enos Cabell were all sharing the title, and Jim Crane, I guess. It made it pretty clear that it was Rafael Montero was signing the dotted line as quickly as he could and turned it in before the ink became dry. Like, but to me, it's more about the length than it is about the AAV. I don't care that the Astros spent $11.5 million on Rafael Montero. I understand the criticism that it's a three-year contract.
But you think if he just signed a one-year deal for $11.5 million, I still think he'd be
I don't think
it'd
be as bad, because you can get out of it at the end of the year. And because, like, David Robertson signed for 10. Like, the Suarez guy in San Diego signed for 10. I forget the other guy's name that signed. No, I can't remember the guy's name. But he signed for, like, Taylor Rogers. He signed for 9. Like, it's not egregious. The AAV is not what's egregious. It's the length of the contract that makes it stand out on its own. I would argue, though, like, what would be the plan if you didn't sign Montero? Because I've seen some people going out on Twitter be like, well, it cost the Astros a chance to sign other free agents.
No, it didn't.
They still signed Jose Abreu. They still signed Michael Brantley. They entered spring training without a hole on this team. They had 6 starters. They were returning the best bullpen in baseball. Every position player was accounted for. Like, where was the spending supposed to go? I don't think it prohibited them from spending money elsewhere.
The biggest critics in sports are the revisionists that can go back and say, well, Abreu had a great postseason. Abreu could have been your setup guy. He's going to be your closer in waiting anyway. You didn't need Montero. Well, part of the reason why that you were able to have the effective season you had in the bullpen is because you had multiple interchangeable options. We talked about this. For a while there, Presley couldn't go 2 days in a row or 2 out of 3. So you were looking to give him a rest. Stanek was having the best year of his career. Montero was having the best year of his career. Neris proved to be a very, very key cog in the backside of the bullpen. So you had interchangeable parts that could give you more options that made you more effective as a unit.
Right.
So I think from Crane's perspective, he's trying to keep that unit intact.
Strength to strength.
Right. And so the money is the money. I still think the money is what drives the other thing with fans and revision. They're going to look back and go, well, you never should have given him that money.
Yeah.
And I think that's easy to pick at. It's just more so, if you really want to be accurate, were you paying him for 1 year that already passed? Or were there expectations he could maintain what he did in that best year of his career?
That's a great point, because that's something that, like, you and I talk about, like, the art of general managing quite a bit. And a lot of times we look at contracts based on what a player has done, and it shouldn't be based on what a player has done. Sure, that's like part of the equation. That's part of, like, projecting what he's going to be. But a general manager's job is to project what a player is going to be. The very best general managers are the ones that are the best at projecting, whether it's drafting a guy, scouting a guy, whether it's signing your own players. The projectability of, like, the skill of that from a general manager is what makes those general managers great. Now, like, what would have been the option if you don't bring back Montero? Like, that's the thing that I look at. You're going to overspend on David Robertson. You're going to overspend on Robert Suarez. You're going to just use Ronel Blanco in the bullpen. So, like, I understand the length of the contract. Like, I'll concede that point, that is nervy. Like, that does make me nervous, that if this is the Rafael Montero that we're getting, if it's Rafael Montero any other year beside 2022, the 3 years is scary. 1 year, I wouldn't worry about it, because you can, you know, punt the very next season. But, like, what would have been the plan if no Rafael Montero? That's the part that I kind of, you know, put my toes in. Like, that's where I draw the line in the sand.
Yeah, my issue is that the guys, I think you might hear, like, Andrew Chafin is a great name. Mm-hmm. He signed a $6.25 million contract with the Diamondbacks way later. The Astros could have signed him anyways.
Yeah, he's also kind of like a lefty, though. Like, he's a loogie. Yeah, like, he's not somebody you're going to be counting on, like, in the 7th, 8th inning. He's a specialty guy.
It's like the issue is that Astros fans, I think, are upset that, like, even though they had a great bullpen, Like the Astros could have done more. They didn't do more, and they're blaming Montero's contract on why they didn't do more. When in reality, like, there are other guys who signed for $5, $6, $7 million that the Astros had the money to go sign anyways, when before Dana Brown and after Dana Brown.
I disagree. Like, who are those $5, $6, $7 million pitchers? You mentioned a specialist. Like, a Loogie is not the same as a guy who can pitch in the seventh and eighth inning.
That's like my point. Like, I think that's what Astros fans, like, they think
that would have been the play.
But don't you guys also think that they thought, hey, we could move on from him and just keep what we've got and still be okay? They probably weren't taking into consideration the versatility of having so many guys that could be back into the bullpen guys.
I don't think so. I think that they knew that
they saw
needed
Abreu
another
step
reliever.
It up.
Right. But it's not about Abreu. It's about the trickle-down effect, especially after you were already going to lose Justin Verlander. Like, they felt they had enough starters to eat those innings. It's not the question here isn't if Rafael Montero is gone, who takes his role? Because Brian Abreu is taking his role with Rafael Montero still on this team. Like, but it's the trickle-down effect. It means Ronel Blanco is in the bullpen all season long versus Rafael Montero.
I think where Joe's going is that you could have found someone for like $5 or $6 million that could have filled the end of the season Stanek role, right? Because during the season, Stanek had a very, very key role late in games, and he was moved around a little bit, but wherever he was used mostly 6, 7, 8, 9. So if he moves out, you move up Abreu, but then Stanek, who really rarely pitched in the playoffs, you put him back in.
Sure.
And people think, well, I'm just saying from a fan's perspective, right, they're like, well, there's the Band-Aid. I fixed it. You're good, and you don't have to pay Montero $11 a year.
I get that. But if you don't have Rafael Montero on this roster right now, Ronel Blanco is on this roster right now. Like, could you have signed a Loogie? Could you have signed an Andrew Chafin for $5.5, $6 million? I wanted the idea of the lefty that pitched against the Astros yesterday. I forget his name. Used to pitch with Tampa Bay. He was in relief for the Angels last night. Matt Moore.
Yep.
Matt Moore. Like, I was in favor of bringing Matt Moore as your lefty guy because I remember him coming up in the Tampa organization, was one of the top prospects, was a bust, but then converted to a reliever and has been really, really good. I just don't understand. Like, I get the idea of Montero, and I understand the criticism of signing Montero to a 3-year deal. I just don't know what the backup plan is, and I hate the narrative of, well, it cost the Astros an opportunity to spend money. No, it didn't. They still signed a first baseman, and they still signed a left fielder DH. 713-780-ESPN if you want to weigh in on this. The HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Also, are the Texans the second most improved team in the NFL? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, guys, I know you're sitting there thinking about, what can I do today? It's raining out. I can't go to the casino because I don't want to drive because the highways are probably slick and there's a lot of bad weather. Well, why don't you just basically get on mybookie.ag and the casino can come to you. This is the way they're changing the game. MyBookie is a sports betting site, but they've also got a great casino, too. MyBookie.ag has a truly realistic casino experience featuring slot machines, progressive jackpots, and live dealer action, all from the comfort of your own home. Weekly blackjack tournaments as well, a brand new collection of high-end games for a chance to win real cash rewards. The MyBookie Casino provides a Las Vegas experience without all the travel and the hotel and the expenses. And the best part, you don't even have to wear pants. You could sit there in your shorts or your pajamas, sit there and kill some time, play a couple of hands, win some bucks, and now you can do some things. Start the MyBookie Casino adventure right now with a generous sign-up bonus by using the promo code BET975. Promo code BET975 is always the code I give you to secure yourself a sweet deposit bonus. And that's not all. Their loyalty program is going to shower you with free spins, cashback offers, lots of exclusive VIP perks. And the more you play, the more you win. As I always tell you, and I always will, when you want to play, if you want to bet on games or you want to get the best casino action where you can play anytime, anywhere, there's only one place to do it. It's mybookie.ag and use that promo code BET975.
Turn down for what?
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Before we get into the Houston Texans asking you the question of the second most improved team in the NFL, I saw Dusty catching a lot of strays yesterday for his usage of Rafael Montero. Look, I think that we're very fair in our criticism of Dusty Baker. I know that I'm silly sometimes and say that I'll never criticize Dusty, but then also say that Jose Abreu should never be batting fourth for the Houston Astros ever again. how can you blame Dusty Baker for using your $11.5 million reliever? Like, and also, if you go back in that game, like, you use Neris in the seventh, you use Montero in the eighth. I understand that the eighth inning is closer to the end of the game, and the seventh inning isn't as close to the end of the game, but did you see who Hector Neris was facing in the bottom of the seventh inning? Hector Neris was facing the top of the order. He faced Taylor Ward, he faced Mike Trout, he faced Shohei Ohtani. Would you rather have your better pitcher pitching in the seventh against the top of the order, and then have your lesser pitcher pitching in the eighth against not the top of the order? So if you want to do like the whole leverage thing, yes, Montero lost it in the eighth. Yes, Neris pitched in the seventh. But do you want Neris facing Ward, Trout, Ohtani? Or do you want Montero facing Ward, Trout, Ohtani? So I thought that was ridiculous that Dusty Baker was getting criticism for his bullpen usage.
Yeah, I don't think any of it should fall on Dusty, because Dusty, his job is to get the best out of his players. What's the best thing to do if a guy has a less than stellar relief appearance, but you know that he's been good for you? Get him back out there.
You're committed
get
to him.
Yeah, get him back out there. Show that you're not someone that's turning your back on him and that you still believe in him, and it gives him confidence when he takes the mound. So therefore, when he goes back out there, you already feel like, hey, that was a speed bump. We're over that. Now I need you to be you, because you're going to be here all year and so am I, so let's go do this.
Mm-hmm.
And give him the strength and the power that he needs before he even throws a pitch. I think you have to. Look, we talked about in the past when Abreu really started coming on again. Is there a time, and when will there be a time? And there was a short time a week or so ago where he shuffled it up a little bit and Abreu was getting closer to being the setup guy. Again, he has the versatility to be able to do that from time to time. Last night was not the time, because no. He was coming off a stinker, and that could have really demoralized his confidence. Yep.
I mean, going forward, you're pot committed to Montero and you're pot committed to Jose Abreu. And Dusty's going to have to earn his money on how he gets Rafael Montero back. And the leverage situation and usage is going to factor into that. And it's the same thing with Abreu. That's why everybody's been wanting Jose Abreu down in the lineup, because everybody feels like Jose Abreu's pressing, and he's pressing in that cleanup spot and RBI spots. So Dusty's going to have to earn his money there too. Joe George is going to try some vending machine tuna here in about 10
Ooh,
minutes.
Coming up.
So you're not going to want to miss that. Twitch.tv/ESPN975.
Is there a prep and mix time worked
in? That's
a
good question. Or,
we do have to prepare it for Joe.
I don't know. I think we need to open it on the air.
Yeah, we'll probably let's do it next segment.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll open it on the air.
Once we get started, I'm going to come join you guys in the studio.
Okay, good deal.
So that way, when I open the can of tuna,
when you throw up, will you be guys, back in the producer's room?
I'll run out.
Okay.
It's got some interesting things on the side, too, that I want to read. The Houston Texans, are they the second most improved team in the NFL? This was on Twitter. Kevin Cole, who covers the National Football League, kind of a nerdy scientific guy. They talked about points-based improvement in NFL, plus-minus based on off-season roster moves and draft value. Obviously, the Houston Texans were very busy this off-season in free agency, very busy on draft day as well. The Houston Texans, according to this computer data, they have them as the second most improved team in the NFL. There's three teams that are leaps and bounds the most improved from where they were a year ago. The most improved is the J-E-T-S, Jets, which you can hear all about them from 3 to 7.
Yeah,
the Houston Texans are the second best team based on the computer metrics, and the third best team are the Chicago Bears. Now I know how this ended up on our rundown.
Yeah, the Bears, the Texans, yeah. And Joel's favorite team, the Jets.
But those three teams by leaps and bounds better than everybody else. Do you think that it's fair to say that the Houston Texans have improved their roster, let's just call it top three in the NFL from where it was a year ago?
It's such a low bar.
I think the answer is yes, too.
I'm still not willing to go full-blown yes, because I think about, Joe, you and I were talking about what Seattle did on draft day. And the fact that they added quality receivers and quality players. Now, they still have Geno Smith at quarterback. But, I mean, they added where they were lacking. I mean, it's the same thing why I gave the Texans credit for the draft, because they were able to fill holes and add players where they were in desperate need. Does that mean that they were one of the two or three most improved teams in the league? I don't know if I'm ready to say that yet. Now, they improved their roster.
See, Seattle, I think, actually added positions of strength. Like, they added JSN when they already have But DK Metcalf, getting older. And, yeah, but they're still strong there. He's getting older, but they're strong. Like, they're talking about just the upcoming season. They're not looking at future games. So, like, they're adding to a position of strength. They added that Charbonnet guy, and they already have Kenneth Walker.
What a bad draft pick.
Yeah, like, they added two players of positions of strength because they are playing the long-term game. Corner was a good pick. I think the corner was the good pick. I think the answer to this question is yes. And really because of what Joe said. Like, it's such a low bar. The Houston Texans had one of the worst rosters in the NFL last year, probably the worst roster in the NFL. You look at what they did this offseason, look at the offensive line. They've added probably two starters, either Shaq Mason at right guard, one of the guys that you drafted I think is going to be the starting center.
Juice.
You upgraded at your third down backup running back. I won't call that a starter. And then you look at the receivers. You lost a starter in Brandon Cooks, but you added a starter. I don't know where it's going to come from, whether it's Tank Dell, whether it's John Mechie, whether it's Robert Woods.
So you had three wide receivers.
We can call that a wash, or maybe we can give that one more starter. So there's three starters there. Dalton Schultz, you added him. That's a fourth starter. The defensive tackle, whether it's Sheldon Rankins, or I forget the other guy off the top of my head who they brought in as well. But Rankins is going to start, so that's a fourth starter. They drafted Will Anderson. There's a fifth starter. I forgot about C.J. Stroud. There's a sixth starter.
Jimmy Ward.
Who am I missing? Jimmy Ward. Seven starters at minimum. They added seven starters out of 22 this offseason alone. So it's hard to argue that the Texans shouldn't be top three most improved in the NFL.
It's I think Seattle's a great one that you mentioned, Joel. They had them fifth on this list, actually.
Okay.
But the Texans are just, the Texans and the Bears, those two teams are so, they're picking first and second in the draft, but these teams added a million players through free agency in the drafts. So, you're almost automatically the most improved team, even though you still might be one of the worst teams in the NFL.
You got the pick of the litter in every round.
And when you look at these two, these two spectrums on this list, you have the top team is the Jets. The bottom two teams are the Packers and the Buccaneers. So it shows you how much the quarterback position also just weights it. Because the worst team is losing Aaron Rodgers in their view. The best team is gaining Aaron Rodgers. The next team above that lost Tom Brady. So it's it's a little weighted for the Jets even, because frankly, outside of that, what did they really accomplish?
I was just going to say.
Alan Lazard and Randall Cobb.
So the Texans added a boatload of players to upgrade the overall roster, and to Jeremy's point, multiple starters. The Jets changed their quarterback and added a quarterback, and they made the same jump. The Jets were a damn good football team in need of one guy, and they got it. Yeah. So it is kind of skewed, but
think of the jump though. You went from Zach Wilson to Aaron Rodgers. Huge, substantial jump.
Do they use war? Does anyone use war in the NFL?
I've never heard.
Is there
an NFL
war
term?
I feel like we should use war in the NFL.
I mean, the wins against replacement for Zach Wilson versus Aaron Rodgers is probably going to be substantial.
I mean, it's like going from Chaz McCormick to Shohei Ohtani. No offense to Chaz. That might have been really mean to Chaz. Yeah, I apologize,
super
Chaz.
Offensive.
That's not fair, because you're not Zach Wilson quality.
I mean, Joe also said that Chaz should have climbed the wall and caught that thing in the eighth inning last night.
No,
don't disagree.
Didn't say
that. I'm just kidding.
I did not say that.
I mean, you look at it too, and I'm sitting there and I'm saying, okay, first of all, by the way, congratulations. Aaron Rodgers is in off-season team workouts for the first time in a decade. So congratulations for him.
A little bitter?
Yeah, a little bitter. I mean, so now maybe the Jets will get better and they'll build some chemistry that we never had last season. So good power on him. The Jets are a talented team that got way better. The Bears and the Texans had no way to go, no other direction to go but up.
Yeah.
And then they did what they did. So credit to them. But then as you weigh it across the league, It's kind of a mixed match then after that, because you might get a decent team that added a few key players that could take him, or you get a little below average team that added the kind of players you're talking about with the Texans, maybe not as many, but they added a couple of quality starters at the right position.
The end result really has nothing to do with this conversation. Like, the win-loss record really has nothing to do with the conversation. It's almost more like, what is the jump in wins going to be? Because the Houston Texans win six wins, they've improved by 100%. That's significant. No other team in the NFL really had. I mean, the bad teams do. But if you won seven games last year, you're not making 100%.
It's roster
jump.
And results, right? It's roster as it stood before the offseason started.
Mm-hmm.
And then how what the results are going to translate to.
I don't even think it's the results that you end up with. To me, it's more about how much did
the
you.
Development?
It's basically how many starters did you add?
See, I think from the Texans' perspective, it's more like we talked about, you can't judge this team right now, although they're going to have to start, judge it on wins and losses. We would judge it on, C.J. Stroud's development. Is he getting it? Is he making progress? But if you're an upper echelon team or a playoff caliber team or right teetering on getting there, now wins and losses basically become everything. Because now, are you on the outside looking in? Or did you make a substantial jump to not only get in, but maybe host a playoff game or win a playoff game?
Yep. 3109 says, it doesn't take a lot to improve when you're in the basement of the league. Facts. Ocho says, if it's the Bumblebee brand tuna and crackers in a box, I keep those in my pantry for lunch all the time, and they're delicious. So the first time that somebody's mentioned good thing about our vending machine tuna,
was that Joe George,
Ocho said that. Do you trust Ocho?
I mean, I've known Ocho.
So do you trust him was the question.
He used to text us all the time.
So do you trust him?
Do you trust him?
Not with this one. Most times I do, but not with this one. All right, Joe George is going to try vending machine tuna when we return. Twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN97.5 and ESPN92.5.
Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It's that time we've been waiting for the last 24 hours. Joe George is going to try vending machine tuna. E-San man, y'all acting like a bunch of privileged white folks if you've never had canned tuna.
Who hasn't?
I've had canned tuna.
I grew up on canned tuna. We ate it all the time.
But never vending machine tuna.
No.
That's where I draw the line.
That's a different story.
I used to eat salmon out of a bag.
I'm not a salmon person.
I used to eat salmon out of a bag. So anyways, also.
Oh, are you here?
No, we can't see
you. BK does the show like that every day.
Yeah, he does.
He prefers the low rider seat.
Is that what he's doing? He's riding dirty, BK, every day in the wheelhouse? Ocho says, Joe, the crackers are bland like the ones from church communion, so I swapped them for rich crackers, but you don't have that luxury. 3726, if the tuna is by itself in a sealed package, you have to mix it yourself with the mayonnaise packet. Those are delicious. It's a pre-made tuna sandwich that's cut in half.
How much work are we doing right here?
I don't think we're going to do a lot. So how do you want to open this? You want me to open it for you?
Yeah, man, guys.
So it's Bumblebee. I guess it's Bumblebee Snack on the Run tuna salad kit with crackers. Comes with one spoon, six crackers, and one Bumblebee tuna salad. It says wild caught, so creamy, so classic. I don't know if it has mayo in it.
I'm starting to think I'm gonna like
let me just say this. If it's already pre-mixed,
that's what I don't like.
Now,
I
think it might be pre-mixed. Now you got a chance for a lot more fireworks because the mayo doesn't have the same shelf life as the tuna.
I thought for sure it's pre-mixed. I think that's the tuna. So no, Joe's opening it up.
This is the tuna.
Oh yeah, there's a can.
You dropped something.
Definitely a can of tuna. There's also the silver packaging. Here, hand me the packet. Hand me the packet while you get this all ready. Blankers, this says, so snackalicious. Feeling hungry? Craving protein? In a rush?
Oh, no.
We got you covered.
It's premixed.
I knew it was premixed.
The mayo's with the tuna.
It had to have been premixed. Maybe it's not mayo. Maybe it's like...
It's the Michael Keaton line in the movie Night Shift.
What are your early observations of the scent that came out of that can?
It's
creamy, Joe.
The problem is that I like tuna, and I feel like this is going to ruin tuna for me.
It's creamy.
Like, I eat tuna, like, probably once a week.
So Snack on the Run. Kids have it all. Tasty protein, great flavors, crisp crackers, and a handy spoon for instant gratification.
Here's the problem.
Thank goodness for the handy spoon.
And I just dropped it.
No, you didn't.
It's down there.
It didn't come in a wrapper?
Spoon.
The spoon
no,
didn't it come
fell
in?
Out. I'll be honest, this looks disgusting.
It really does.
It looks like dog food. I'm not going to lie.
Plus it's
that was
canned.
Just the cough. That was
it's
cough.
Canned cream.
So you're just gonna no? We got it. I'm like we.
I lost my spoon. When I was supposed to like
Mitchell, our intern, run and get in the kitchen. Bring us a spoon.
He's too busy debating things.
You have to eat like all of that though. It's like no. It's not just
yeah.
One
you
bite.
Can't just have one bite. Whoa, for sure. Load it up.
Time out. We did not agree to that.
Load it up.
We didn't buy. We didn't spend
this $2.70. This is organic. We're doing these.
Mitchell
things on the
said fly. He'll eat the rest.
How's it smell?
We didn't spend $2.75 for you to
eat
a bite
of
this.
Here, man. I didn't do the challenge. You did.
Remember, I bought you lunch. I didn't want to smell it. No.
Why not?
Because I'm the one watching you do all
God,
this.
That
mess.
Is disturbing that the mayo was in there.
Does your wife know you're doing this? Are you going to tell her later that you're doing this?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you while you're no sitting choice. In the bathroom all night, going, and she's going, Joe, where are you? JJ needs a diaper change. Oh, he's got your spoon. There it is. Look at that.
Should we put this on the gram?
No, we're rolling on Twitch.
You are so afraid.
Oh, thank
afraid
you,
to
Mitchell.
Mitchell brought the spoon.
You just dumped it back in the can. I mean, you are so fearful of this. You dumped it back in the can.
All right, so how much do I have to put on here?
You got
to
load up the
little orange thing right
there. That's what I don't know, man.
What is that, little shrimp in there, too, or fake crab meat?
I think it's carrot.
Maybe it's a carrot.
Okay.
The carrot really spices up the tuna.
At least the vegetables will stabilize
everything.
All right,
Joe.
I really like tuna. It smells awful.
There we go. How is it? Thumbs up, thumbs down.
Yeah, you're going to talk while your mouth full. Hey, what's up, man?
I'm going to get away from the mic.
Thumbs up, thumb down. Ah, he kind of likes it. He kind of likes it.
How's it smell?
It's not good.
You just thumbs upped it.
But it's not terrible.
You thumbs upped it.
The smell or the taste?
Okay, it's not good.
This is, so
well, you got a lot more to go. So we're not just doing one and done here. You're not jumping right to the NBA. You got more tuna to consume here.
If y'all missed this, we noticed this in the vending machine yesterday, and somehow we conned Joe George to be the one that tried it because Blankers and I were definitely not going to do that. And Joe brave. He just reached for another cracker. He's going for a second cracker.
I told
him
he's got to finish.
Okay, look, I'll do one. It's actually
Mitchell said he wanted to try it too. Intern Mitchell.
Of course he did. I mean, first of all, why are there carrots in tuna? B. Annan brings that question up. I would never have thought about carrots and tuna.
Maybe it has something to do with the preservation of the
worst tuna. Worst tuna I've ever had. Subway. For sure. Disgusting.
Battery Chuck said the thumbs up means he survived.
With that ice cream scooper thing, the way they put it on the...
I think that's why it's gross, is like watching them use the ice cream scooper for tuna. I really like feel uncomfortable with how low I am in this chair right now. Yeah. Like, I just like... I am like 5'6" as it is. Like, BK is 6 feet tall.
Stand up.
Chair. No. I don't know if the microphone goes that high. All right,
he's reaching for a second bite. Like
there is carrots in there.
Yeah, there is. On a scale of like 1 to 10.
4.
I think we're
like
going
to... It's like a 4.
I think we're going to add like a food critique, like running bit on
you
the show.
You and Eric Sandler. This is our culture map segment.
Eric Sandler goes to 5-star restaurants. Joe George does a food review on vending machine tuna.
Get our 5-star reviews from Joe George.
You know what's so sad is that...
But you like it.
It sounds like people actually might not be hearing this on the radio. We might be doing EAS alerts right
Someone's
now.
Someone's got to see a picture of how creamy that the stuff looks in the can.
Twitch went nuts, though, so that's good.
This is fine.
I've never heard of carrots.
I think
tuna
the
either.
Issue is how it looks.
Celery? Onions?
Yeah.
Sure.
See, I think I need relish. I'm a relish guy in my tuna.
Why are the carrots
like,
in
relish
there?
And pickles. Like, I chop
that's good
up
call.
Pickles.
I like that. I'll put that in a good. Chicken salad.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Uh-huh. You're going for the second bite. You're smelling.
Here's the thing. It smells better when it's outside the can.
It smells better when it's 10 feet away as opposed to one foot away.
And I got to be honest with you. When you open that can to see how creamy white the inside was, that's what worried me the most for you. Like mayo sitting in a can, no matter how long the tuna is supposed to be okay in a can, that's frightening.
It looks like dog food. Or no, you know what it looks like? It looks like cat food.
Yes, it does.
It looks like cat food.
Yep.
Was the second bite better than the first one?
Yeah.
Oh, he's digging it now.
Oh, you're going to finish this, aren't you?
Yeah, there's no doubt. The interns are getting nothing.
I hope you already brought your lunch, Mitchell, because I don't think there's going to be any left for you. Joe enjoyed the second
bite. You know
what? Did it go up? Did you?
The second bite was better for whatever reason. The problem here now becomes it's not worth $3.
$2.75.
Okay. You save a quarter.
Is it worth $2.75?
Do you think it's still going to be worth it at 8 o'clock tonight?
Probably not. I don't have a good feeling.
When your wife can't find you and you're going, I'm still in the bathroom!
Risk says he'd rather get pepper sprayed than eat that. I'm with him. I'd rather get pepper sprayed than eat this junk, too.
You never have like heard that audio from when they
I've heard it, yeah. Yeah, and who was the boss lady that came in and said, not wise, guys.
Was it Laura?
I don't know. No, I don't think so. I think it was like the, I want to say it was like the, whoever owned the building, maybe? I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't know. That's way before. I was still in Chicago, I think, when they pepper sprayed John.
Maybe it was at the old building.
Oh, with the, yeah,
but
the blitz bit.
There was the lady that was
suspended
like,
for that.
But who was the lady that came in there? Like, where was her role?
I think it was Laura.
Was it Laura?
I think so.
Oh, really?
All right.
We need to interview Laura and get her thoughts on that. Fateful
I'm gonna
think they ever want to revisit or remember that again. Honestly,
Mitchell has asked me.
Why are you
to
putting this near
himself? Me? Because it's my right. I'm right-handed.
Mitchell's gonna finish it up.
The inside of that can. Every time it is disturbing. I don't. As bad as the smell is. That looks more like oatmeal than it does tuna.
I think this is one of those smell not taste things. Like. If you don't smell it, it tastes fine, but the smell is gross.
That's how I like to eat my food, is not smell it. It's usually a prerequisite. So give us the final review. What's our first ever...
The smell is so bad, like it's a 5.
That just went up.
Yeah, it went from a 4 to... I told you, it's
5's not bad.
I like this.
When I pulled it away, it was better.
5's not bad.
307 on the text line says, we got a new bit. What's Joe eating? ESPN... gets the weirdest stuff and makes Joe eat it weekly. It's genius.
This could be part of our rotating bits.
Yes.
Our rotating benchmarks.
Fine.
What's eating Joe George?
I'm going to get in on some of these food critiques, too. Now, it's not going to be crap food like you just ate.
Look, if
you're going Sandler.
Yeah, I'm going to go closer to Sandler. Yeah,
you'll be our cultured. If, cultured what's eating.
If the segment. Range is Joe and Sandler, I'm going to be much closer to Sandler.
And
than
I get the garbage.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
You're the, what do they call the little fish at the bottom of the tank?
The algae eater?
Yeah, you're that guy. Yeah. What is that? What are those fish called?
Algae eater.
I don't know.
You're that.
Tadpole?
That's no, an algae eater. You're not trying to multiply. You're trying to suck scum off the glass.
Like, catfish do that at lakes, right? But I'm talking about the ones, like, in the aquarium, like the little tanks.
Those are algae
eaters. Yeah, but I think they're called something.
That's what they are.
But I think they're called, like they're official, actually, they have an official name.
Like a hyphenated.
Yeah. Okay. They're algae eaters, but I think those algae eaters are called something.
I'm going back to my studio.
Yeah, we need to go to break, I think.
Are you going
to
take that with you?
Are you going to make it?
Are you going to finish it?
No, Mitchell's going to eat it, the intern.
We'll get Mitchell's grade, too. You gave it a 5. We'll see what Mitchell thinks about it. But, yeah. Hey, I tip my cap to you, though. That was well done.
Thanks, that's
admirable by Joe George.
Belcher map.
Do you think that he makes it to the end of the show?
Oh, yeah.
Without...
If he doesn't have to finish the whole can, I don't know that there's enough there to force him to use the restroom.
Yeah. We like, either way, though, right? Come out either side?
We don't know. He might have already eaten some things that have buffered his boiler room.
That's a good question. Had you eaten today before you had that?
Like a bagel this morning.
That's probably wise.
The bagel's going to soak up a lot of what could be devastating for you.
All right. Well done, Joe. I tip my cap to you. Well done. First ever crap food review from Joe George.
And now I got people coming after my height because of that chair. I am 5'6". Well, it's just rude.
How tall is BK? He does it every day.
He's like 6 feet.
He also sits
right?
Indian style in it.
Can't say that.
Cancel. Are you being for real?
No, I'm not.
You're right.
You guys both looked at me like, wait, what?
You might have to issue an apology at 1:15.
Canceled.
Eric goes, Pennsylvania Paul says, this was a success. Next up, gas station sushi, Joe.
That's a great idea.
Can I choose the gas station?
No.
Nope.
Absolutely not.
No. Or the shelf life. Nope.
We can't kill them. We got it. The shelf life has to be.
It's got to be like.
But what gas station's putting a shelf life on there?
It's got to be like a California.
It might be
roll.
Like required by law.
They just want to sell it.
The sushi?
Hey, we got one day left on this sushi. Don't put anything on there. Like, put it up in the front of the store.
Like HEB sushi's not bad. Like it's passable.
But you can see them make it right in front of you.
I'll eat HEB sushi for sure. Kroger sushi? I don't know. All right, 713-780-3776. Congrats, Joe. Wait, well done. All right, Michael Jordan had the Jordan rules. Watching Yordan Alvarez play baseball, he needs the Yordan rules. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.